And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Hey, Truth Seekers, welcome to this edition of the Malloy Podcast. It is the 11th of July, 2018. Donald Trump is in Brussels, Belgium, creating new enemies for the United States, leaders of countries that, since the end of World War II, have been our allies, but Trump doesn't give a shit. So before I get too far into that, there was a poll taken by the Pew Research Center June 5th through June 12th among a population of 2,000 adults. And it was an open-ended question. Just which president has done the best job in the respondent's lifetime? 44% of Americans said Obama, 33% said Clinton. Am I back? How much did you miss? 44%. All right, 44, I'm sorry, 44%. Hello? Is it working?
Yeah.
Hello? Sorry. Where was I? What do you think's the problem?
I think there's a loose wire.
A loose wire. All right, the next time I have to do this, you're going to have to dig up a best of, because I can't sit here and do this all night.
Don't touch it.
Well, I'm not touching it. Pew Research Center conducted a survey from June 5th through the 12th with 2,000 adults. The question was, it was open-ended, which president has done the best job in the respondents' lifetimes? And they asked for the first and second choices for the survey's findings. 44% said Obama was either the best or the second best president in their lifetime. 33% said the same for Clinton. 32% said Ronald Reagan. 19% said Trump. Now, this is all fake news, of course. There's no way in hell that Obama could be doubling Trump's popularity, right? It's deep state is at work here. Just like Jim Jordan said the other day, it's the deep state. Yeah. Okay. Now, the survey noted that Americans' views on the best president largely tied to their age. Millennials were more likely than older generations to list Obama for obvious reasons. The millennials, of course, weren't born when Reagan was president. Of the millennials, 62% believe Obama is either the best or second best president in their lifetime. Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, 57% of Republicans say Reagan was the best president. Such bullshit, huh? I don't think Reagan realized he was president. Let's see. When Trump came back from North Korea, what did he say? You can sleep good tonight, you lousy goddamn fake news reporters and your children, because I just ended the nuclear threat of North Korea. Remember that? Right now, Trump is begging North Korea to, quote, honor our handshake. Anybody with any experience, directly or just observational, like me, observational, about North Korea, knew the whole goddamn thing was a joke, a farce, and ridiculous. The only reason Kim Jong-un did it was to humiliate Trump and to make Kim appear as a hero back in the gulag that he runs that he calls North Korea, or whatever he calls it, the People's Republic of Korea or some such horseshit. Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Oh, my God. But it was a joke. You knew it. I knew it. Experienced members of the diplomatic corps knew it. Everybody knew that Trump was being played like a goddamn banjo by this overweight 30-something dictator who kills his family members with fucking anti-aircraft cannon. But Trump, being the ignorant savage that he is, he expected that because Kim shook his hand, a handshake that Trump never honored handshakes. Trump never honored contracts. So he tweet begged Kim Jong-un to, quote, honor the contract and, more importantly, the handshake about nukes. Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ. You want to go up to Trump and say, hey, tired of winning yet, asshole? Every single good thing that's happening in the economy is happening because of programs that Obama put in place. Now, there's a lot that Obama did after the capitalists tried to destroy the entire global economy because they're such greedy fucking pigs. And there's some things that Obama felt, I guess, that he had to do, like bailing out the banks. But the uptick in the stock market, which indirectly affects a lot of people through your 401ks and shit. And the unemployment rate now is down to one of the lowest points it's been since the end of Bill Clinton's presidency. But none of that is happening because of Trump. Not even a piece of it. But his handlers let him go ahead and crow and brag and strut and try to take credit for it. But we know, don't we? Anyway, Andrea Mitchell was on Monday night's The 11th Hour on MSNBC with Brian Williams. And in the little back and forth between Brian Williams and Andrea Mitchell, she kept using the collective noun. Is it back? What, did I touch something?
As if we.
Huh?
As if we.
Fwee?
You're saying as if we.
Oh. How about now? Is it working now? Okay. So Andrea Mitchell, who had made the trip to North Korea, or to Korea, South Korea, with Trump, when she got back, she was interviewed by Brian Williams on The 11th Hour on MSNBC on Monday night. That Monday, not last night. Well, maybe it was last night. I didn't watch it. Anyway, Brian Williams said, quote, the only way to start on North Korea is in simple English, and that is, did we get played? This is what Andrea Mitchell answered. Quote, "We sure did get played." See the pronoun we? "And Pompeo, with the best of intentions to try to flush out what in fact was agreed to in Singapore, if anything, he got snubbed." Now, she's talking about this recent meeting between Pompeo and the underlings in North Korea. That was a meeting where hello? "I'm getting close to ripping the goddamn thing off the thing here, throwing it through the glass window and walking out. I really am." Andrea Mitchell said, "We sure did get played." She added, "And Pompeo, with the best of intentions to try to..." All right. We're going to take a break, see if we can fix this.
Looking like the world's going just a little crazy. And I know it can be all of them, man.
Test.
Just
1, 2, 3.
Me, yeah. So I guess
okay, we have a new microphone, which obviously doesn't pick up as well as the other microphone, but hopefully this will work until we can... put it back together with spit and glue or spit and string. You know, oddly, right before we went on, we started recording here, I was on YouTube watching a documentary on Lagos, Nigeria. Am I still on?
Yes, get closer.
Closer? It's in my goddamn mouth. I was watching a documentary on Lagos, Nigeria, and how people there struggle just to sell enough junk or garbage to get enough to eat that day. And I was thinking about how we Americans live in comparison. Molly is taking an advanced placement geography course her freshman year, and she's had to do homework over the summer. What's it called? Human geography. It's about cultures, people, races. And she said to me the other day, she said, "Dad, you know the population kind of works out this way. 1.7 billion people live in so-called developed countries. 5.3 billion do not. They live in some form of struggle." Now, I didn't know that because it was my understanding that extreme poverty on this planet had been eradicated. So I don't know. I in watching this video that I was just watching, though, from Lagos, Nigeria, doesn't look very good, folks. Where was I? Oh, the reason I brought that up is because a lot of people in Lagos, Nigeria, just like in Manila in the Philippines or in various countries or cities in India, there's a whole subculture of people, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who make their living scavenging through these huge municipal dumps. I started thinking that's where this microphone belongs. In one of those municipal dumps where somebody could salvage it and maybe get 2 cents American for it, right? Andrea Mitchell came back after Mike Pompeo's trip, not Donald Trump's, Mike Pompeo's trip over the weekend, and was interviewed by Brian Williams on MSNBC. Williams. "The only way to start on North Korea is in simple English, and that is, did we get played?" Andrea Mitchell, "We sure did get played. And Pompeo, with the best of intentions to try to flesh out what, in fact, was agreed to in Singapore, if anything, he got snubbed. Sarah Sanders said he would be meeting with Kim Jong-un, and he was not. That meeting was never in the cards. And in fact, he spent 2 days going through endless long multi-course dinners, lavish, which he didn't have an appetite for. And they didn't get to the substance. They never got to the meat as to what really was agreed to in Singapore. And that's the problem. The president referring to a contract? Referring to Trump. What they signed were promises, empty promises, in fact. When he said in the tweet today that he relied more, he put more importance on the handshake with Kim Jong-un, why on earth would he be trusting a handshake from someone who is from a regime that has a history, a family history of having cheated and lied to the United States and to other allies, to their own neighbors in the past? It's fucking Donald Trump. Brian Williams. He's addressing this to General Barry McCaffrey, who is in the studio. General, meantime, this has become a standard line now in the president's rallies, talking about how much safer we are. There are no longer missiles in the skies over the Pacific. Question to you is, are we any closer to denuclearization? And remind me again what North Korea's motive is in agreeing to denuclearization. General McCaffrey. You know, Andrea Mitchell pretty much summed it up. I have a great deal of empathy for Secretary Pompeo and Jim Mattis, Secretary of Defense, and the CIA director. They've got to remain objective. I've been dealing with the issue since I was a JCS strategic planner. JCS being Joint Chiefs of Staff, strategic planner during the Clinton administration. The only difference between then and now is they have 60 nuclear weapons, maybe, and some ICBM capability to strike the United States. End quote. Oh, he added this. They have no intention of denuclearizing. Now, you knew that, Truth Seeker. So did I. So did my 13-year-old daughter. So did anybody over the age of 10 who's paying attention, except Trump. Trump is a liar and a bullshitter, a con artist, a grifter. So he comes back from his little photo op with Kim with that big smiley face. Hey, you can sleep better tonight. So, the Secretary of State for the United States, where it concerns Korea, has somehow got to maintain a dialogue to lower the tension, keep our allies close to us, the ones that Trump is trying desperately to shit can right now. Well, he's probably sleeping now or eating cheeseburgers. Pompeo also has to reassure South Korea and Japan. He's got to try to keep the Chinese supportive of the economic embargo and stop raising these nonsense expectations that come out of this batshit crazy president. Trump saying that Kim is an honorable man and revered by his people. That shit doesn't translate in North Korea. They know better. What? I'm as close as I can get. Oh, I can't turn my head? Okay. Jesus. Anyway, regarding Kim, the guy's a monster. He's murdered hundreds of thousands of his own citizens. So we're in a very strange, concerning place right now. But meanwhile, Trump is still waiting for his Nobel Prize and his big-ass military parade. Right? Right. This guy, I'll tell you, this guy is driving me crazy. Now, in the meantime, Mike Pompeo himself, who went to North Korea to try to hammer out some of the details from Trump's recent trip and the alleged agreement that Trump thinks he got. And according to Pompeo himself, this is from the Ring of Fire website. Pompeo said the trip went, quote, as badly as it could have gone, end quote. And now we're back to square one with North Korea. Trump failed. Pompeo failed. And we have no reason to believe that this trend will reverse itself. We never did have that expectation, did we, truth seekers? Never. Not once. Not those of us who are sane or trying to hold on to the shreds of sanity that we still have left, right? So what happened in the meeting, really? No, I mean between Trump and Pompeo. I mean Trump and Kim. Well, we know that Trump talked about wanting to purchase real estate in North Korea and build those beautiful condos on the South China Sea. Remember all that horse shit? And we know that Kim agreed to nothing. Nothing. Nothing in writing, nothing on paper. Nothing. Trump the other day was saying, Kim Jong-un's going to honor it because we shook hands. As if this is some kind of a fucking pickup game of basketball on some court in Brooklyn rather than a goddamn nuclear disarmament agreement. We knew this wasn't going to happen. You knew it. I knew it. Jesus Christ. But anyway, so Pompeo goes over there, realizing that nothing got accomplished between Kim and Trump. Nothing. Except to the people of North Korea, Kim is now a bigger figure and a more fearsome figure than before Trump went over with his knee pads. So, Pompeo goes over there, realizing nothing got accomplished from the summit. And he's been tasked with making things final. But there's nothing to make final. Oh, my God. He was trying to cement this imaginary shit that Trump came back to the United States and said was real, the denuclearization. And he wanted a commitment from North Korea, Pompeo did. And the answer he got basically was no. No, we're not finalizing anything. And they were also, the North Koreans, very angry at the fact that the U.S. seems to be, quote, unilaterally telling us to denuclearize. That is absurd, end quote. Now, remember what the lion son of a bitch who's in the White House, what he said when he came back. It was a done deal. Everything's fine. No more nukes. It's almost as if the North Koreans never heard that language when Trump was there until he got back here and started fucking around with his Twitter machine, right? So it makes you wonder what Trump and Kim actually talked about in their meetings. Because when Pompeo went over there and discussed this, the North Koreans appeared to be blindsided by what Pompeo was saying. Like, what are you talking about? We don't have any agreement. Ring of Fire's Farron Cousins, who put this together, said, I do not believe that Donald Trump talked about denuclearization. There's no way. There's no way that he actually got them to agree to anything. Because according to Pompeo, and his super horrible, very bad trip. They had no idea what, the North Koreans had no idea what he was talking about. They acted like the United States was being some kind of a crazy person asking them to get rid of all their nuclear capability. As if they were saying to Pompeo, why the fuck would we do that? We just spent 80 years getting to this point. And you send this bloated bimbo over? And now we're supposed to go, oh, okay, no more bombs. Pompeo did admit that he came back and he said, quote, look, the process of denuclearization of North Korea is going to take decades. So really, it's going to be 20, 30 years that they're still considered a nuclear threat around the globe. End quote. So do you understand this? Pompeo went over there to try to fix Donald Trump's mess. And when Pompeo gets there, he finds out that Trump did absolutely nothing except strut around with this murderous little prick, Kim. And in Trump's mind, therefore, Pompeo managed to make things worse. Baron Cousin says, now, I don't want to say that literally everyone told you so, but I have to say that literally. Everyone told you so. Yeah, we did, didn't we? I mean, we have more than a dozen instances over the last 25 years when North Korea agreed to denuclearize, and not one of those times did they follow through. And if you thought for some reason Mr. Trump and Mr. Pompeo, that those guys were going to go over there and make it happen because everybody else ignored it. First of all, that completely ignores the history of the relationship between the United States and North Korea, among other things. And second of all, it completely ignores the fact that North Korea has, had, or will have absolutely no intention whatsoever of denuclearizing. Why should they? Now, this has been said many, many times before. If the United States were to take the lead and totally denuclearize, you know what Reagan and Gorbachev talked about briefly when they were in Helsinki? Do you remember? Was it Helsinki? No, it was in Reykjavik, Iceland. That's right. Trump is meeting the Russian dictator in Helsinki. So when Reagan and Gorbachev were in Reykjavik, and in casual conversation, I don't know who spoke first, Gorbachev or Reagan, but one of them said, you know, maybe we ought to get rid of all nuclear weapons and set an example. And the response from the other guy was, that's a good idea. And then immediately, Gorbachev's aides and Reagan's aides stepped in and said, well, now, yeah, that'll be great. Maybe we can talk about that someday. But no. That's when the trust but verify meme came up. Do you remember that? Are you old enough to remember that? So anyway, if we were to denuclearize, maybe we could show the rest of the world that, hey, if we can do this, so can you. If we want countries to start denuclearizing, we've got to be the leader. Huh? Shit. That's not going to happen because our military-industrial complex needs to be the biggest and the baddest and the boldest and have the most death-dealing weaponry. The most explosive weapons out there. And that's what makes other countries feel they have to do the same. So this is on us. This is our fault, and Pompeo and Trump and all the other idiots in this administration are only going to make this situation worse. Because like we've been talking about over and over, none of these fuckers have any idea of what they're doing. They don't have a clue. Let's take a break, Kathy. Stick around, y'all. I hope you can hear this. I mean, I don't know. Okay, we're back. Is it working? What we did, what Kathy did, was switch out the cable. Apparently the short is in the cable. So it's just the price of admission to this podcast is not, it's not the $50 a year that you spend, but it's putting up with this shit. That's the price of admission. Anyway, something very, very strange happened today on Fox, the sewer network. Shepard Smith, I just wonder how much longer he's going to be there. Today, he really went off on Trump's relentless and ridiculous and stupid and unfounded attacks on NATO. Smith said, quote, the president can turn back the global clock centuries. Smith said, quote, Trump has upended world order in the way that no president has. He attacks our closest allies. He berates them and insults them. He labeled Germany captive to Russia, and he blasted NATO agreements that date back to World War II. End quote. Now, if you remember this filthy pig during the campaign, before he was ever, with the help of his Russian friends, made president of the United States, he constantly bitched and whined about NATO. He said that the NATO members failed to pay what they owe to the organization, which is bullshit. It is not true. Listen up. This is what Smith, Shepard Smith, explained. Quote, the truth is, every NATO country has paid its bills for NATO shared budgets. No country, not one, is delinquent. About 4 years ago, NATO members agreed to beef up their military to spend 2% of their country's GDP for defense by the year 2024. Obviously, that deadline is 6 years away. And a handful of those countries have already reached that goal. So Trump, again, is nothing but a fucking liar. The problem is, this lying son of a bitch eventually is going to get us into a situation we don't want to be in. So now, Trump, like the asshole he is, has upped his demand, insisting that every member nation pay 4% of its GDP, an amount that the United States doesn't even live up to. We don't provide that much. I think our contribution is 3 point something. This filthy bastard. And then Trump singled out Germany for targeted criticism, despite Germany's long history since World War II of providing crucial aid to the United States. Trump doesn't give a fuck because he doesn't know any of this. Shep Smith said, quote, Germany is one of our closest allies. After the attacks of 9/11, we called on Germany's leadership to fight with us in Afghanistan. They answered. They fought with American troops for 17 years. When our soldiers are maimed and mauled in combat, they're flown to Germany. And then Shep Smith added this, quote, the president's attacks on our NATO friends is drawing concern from quarters around this globe, including from both sides of the political aisle here at home. Which, to me, is the only thing that Shepard Smith said in that newscast that I don't think is true. Republicans don't give a fuck. Republicans in Congress, these Christian pigs, they don't care. They want destruction. Because in their twisted minds, as we've said a million times, global destruction, mass death, will cause their Messiah to return. Now, this is from CNN. NATO diplomats, CNN's reporting, are dumbfounded by Trump's barrage of acidic rhetoric at this meeting in Brussels. Trump came out squealing and brawling like the prick that he is. First thing this morning, accusing Germany of being a captive of Russia, calling members of the alliance delinquent in their defense spending, and insisted they increase it immediately. The fuck does this guy think he is? Well, we know who he thinks he is. One senior European diplomat told CNN, quote, it's like the world has gone crazy this morning. Trump's performance was beyond belief. End quote. Now, this asshole's remarks today sent officials here and with the NATO countries trying to figure out what the fuck was going on. Some of the Republican Party back here, the American Fascist Party, were worried enough that one said the president is trying to, quote, tear down the 29-member alliance. So the U.S. House of Representatives, which goes out of its way to be in fascistic lockstep with this asshole, passed a resolution. Ooh, a resolution to send a, quote, strong message of support for NATO, end quote. Another senior European diplomat said, this is very confusing. Referring to Trump's targeting of Germany, this particular envoy said, quote, the attacks before and now this tremendous stuff today, it doesn't make any sense. We're still in the process of analyzing it, end quote. Senate Foreign Relations Chairman Bob Corker, who is retiring, told CNN that he was concerned that Trump is, quote, trying to tear down NATO and punch our friends in the nose, end quote. Corker said Trump's rhetoric is, quote, damaging to us, end quote. And then this little weasel, this little Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan, said that he subscribes, quote, to the view that we should not be criticizing our president while he is overseas. But let me say a couple of things. NATO is indispensable. So, apparently, according to CNN's reporting, New York Times reporting, the after-dinner conversation, you might say, among NATO defense officials, the discussion was about how long U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis is going to put up with this shit. He's a former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, Mattis is. And is a strong believer in alliances. How long is Mattis going to stay in the Trump administration? For the second year in a row, Trump was throwing a little shit hemorrhage, a little tantrum at NATO, and Mattis was having to clean up after him. Jesus Christ. Now, publicly, NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, and other European leaders push back on this barrage of garbage coming out of the asshole's mouth. They attempted to downplay notions that the alliance may be fracturing. You know, this is something, and I hope you understand this. I know Trump's core supporters, these Christian and political fascists who don't give a fuck about anything except their Armageddon-y shit. The one person on Earth, more than any other, who really wants to see NATO break into a million pieces is Vladimir Putin. Now, I said the other night, we can all make an argument that maybe NATO should go away. But not now, and not under this psycho president. But the one person who really, really, really wants his shit to blow up is Putin. That's why Putin works so hard to get this orange fucker elected leader of the United States. Dear God. Anyway, Stoltenberg, who is the NATO Secretary General, said this, quote, "The strength of NATO is that despite these differences, we have always been able to unite around our core task to protect and defend each other because we understand that we are stronger together than apart." Now, Stoltenberg told that to Trump over breakfast. British Prime Minister Theresa May used a press conference this afternoon to declare that, quote, "NATO is as vital to us today as it has ever been," end quote. And the Prime Minister of UK, Theresa May, ended her sentence by declaring that, quote, "the UK's commitment to it remains as steadfast as ever," end quote. You know, I read this stuff, and it just blows my mind. I mean, I've been told, or I've read, or I've come to the conclusion through the writings and lectures and so on and so forth of people far more aware and smarter than I am. But the argument for a long time has been that when this country collapses, and it surely will, all empires do, but when this country ultimately collapses, it'll be from the rot within, not an attack from without. And Trump is a personification of that rot. And Mike Pence is little Christian fuckhead who is right there smiling beatifically at Trump's back of Trump's head, Trump's ass, Trump's shoulders, Trump's face, Trump's crotch, wherever he can lock his eyes. You ever notice that about Pence? He's just waiting in the wings. And he's happy as a mudlark because he's a fundamentalist Christian. And any fundamentalist Christian will tell you that when tensions mount between the United States and Russia, or Israel and the United States, or Israel and Russia, or anybody in the Middle East that has any connection to the Middle East, when those tensions start to rise, these Christian fundamentalists get orgasmic. Because this may be the moment. Gog and Magog. These crazy fuckers. So not only do we have somebody who is clinically insane leading the country, so to speak, but the cadre of people around him are even worse than he is. Much more so. And with the exception of the Nazi Jew, Stephen Miller, who is a close advisor to Trump, and his fucked up son-in-law, everybody else are fundamentalist Christians. They love Jesus, and Jesus loves them. And it's their duty now to assist in getting Jesus' attention, and maybe God's too, so that Jesus and or his old man God will start hurling thunderbolts at the earth and killing hundreds of millions of people for sport. That's what this psychotic fucking God does, but killing hundreds of millions of people for sport, so that the Christians then can stand there and just weeping with joy as people fall dead and corpses catch fire all around them, because they'll know then that their Redeemer liveth. This is madness. All right, we're coming up on a break, and when we come back, we're going to switch gears a bit. I don't want to talk about Trump. I hate this slimy bastard. So the microphone is fixed now, right, Kathy? All right. So stick around. We have a whole hour of fun and frivolity coming up. Stay with me. I'm Mike Moore. My first program director said to me, "Don't ever say welcome back after a break." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, because it didn't go anywhere. You did." Okay. Welcome back. It is church night, right? Church night. I guess everybody who listens to this podcast knows what I mean by church night. It's prayer meeting night across the country, lots of parts of the country, certainly here in the South. Oh, my God, is it prayer meeting night in the South? Woohoo! Well, since it is church night, do you know the psychotic bastard in the White House has a personal Bible lady? Did you know about that? I'm sure you did. Her name is Paula White. She is white. Long blonde hair. Fundamentalist evangelical Christian. And very, 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 very conservative. Now, I mean, you all know, I don't care if you're Jew, Muslim, or Christian, or Buddhist, or Hindu, it doesn't make a difference. You know the mythology about the Christian Messiah, right? And if you go back to some of the songs you learned in Sunday school, he walks with us and he talks with us and he tells me I don't know, I forget it. But remember that song? And he loves us just as we are without one plea. Remember that one? What's his name? Used to sing this. Just as I am without one plea, O Lamb of God. Blah, 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 blah. I remember all those songs. I really do. Anyway, apparently, according to Wong Kett, Jesus is also a personal friend with Donald Trump's so-called spiritual advisor. That's this church lady, Paula White. Oh, God. Yeah. And according to her, Jesus also died to wash away all your sins, but including your sins of masturbation. That's right. Jesus died to cleanse you of your sins, among which is jerking off, right? Okay, so that's wonderful. Anyway, according to Wachette, Paula White had some thoughts to share after visiting one of Trump's detention centers where they're holding migrant brown children. Do y'all remember when Clinton was president and when Obama was president, all the talk from these right-wing fuckwads about how the Democrats were setting up detention centers because they're going to put all the conservatives in there? Remember that? Remember when, I think it was Obama, maybe it was Clinton, came with an idea of service to the country for young people, kind of like a AmeriCorps, but a little bit different, if they didn't want to go in the military. And so these camps were refurbished, and right away, the crazy fucks in this country said, oh, yeah, they're going to get the kids over there and pollute their minds. Well, guess who has the camps? Yeah, the fascist pig that runs the country. You don't hear anything about that anymore, though, from the right-wingers, do you? Of course you don't. So, Paula White, the TV preacher. Yeah, she's a TV preacher. She does not have a divinity degree. She never went to any seminary or theological school. I don't think she even has a degree in anything. But she's a TV preacher, which figures. Anyway, she says the baby jails are super nice and have granite countertops in the kitchens and everything. Huh? She also says that there's an awful lot of stuff that liberals and commies and lefties and Democrats in the Bible take biblical scripture totally out of context. Yeah, we do. We do that all the time, don't we? She says stuff like, well, or when we say, well, Jesus was a refugee. Miss Paula says, no, he wasn't. She says, yes, he did live in Egypt for 3.5 years, but it was not illegal. If he had broke the law, he would have been sinful. And if he was sinful, of course, he couldn't be these assholes' Messiah, right? First of all, somebody needs to tell Miss Paula White that Jesus was a total fucking lawbreaker. He broke synagogue law. He broke civil law. He said to the authorities in Aramaic, I guess, fuck you, you're crazy. Yeah, Jesus was a big ass lawbreaker. That's what he was. In the eyes of the teachers of Jewish law, the rabbis, and in the eyes of the Roman government, right? John 5, verse 18. For this reason, they tried all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own father, making himself equal with God. I think those were the rabbis. They were a little bit pissed off about that. If he really said that, Jesus would be bad. He said that shit. All right, Jesus, woo. You're equal with Yahweh, huh? And according to Wachent, he was furthermore known for breaking what's known as the oral Torah. In other words, the traditions in Jewish law not necessarily written down in Torah. And remember that time Jesus was crucified? Huh? I think he does. The Roman government didn't just say, we crucify you for no reason. He was crucified because he had been deemed a criminal, having violated, according to Wachent, far greater laws than the misdemeanor committed in a first-time illegal border crossing into the United States from Mexico. Yeah. He was accused of claiming to be a king, even though he really didn't, actually. Other people tried to declare he was a king, but he never said that. And you couldn't be a king in the Roman Empire because that was, you know, like illegal. And therefore, he was crucified under Roman law. With a little help from the Sanhedrin, the Jewish judges who looked the other way, you might say. I know that's a big deal with the Jews and the Christians, right? And it was, how many years ago was it, the Second Vatican Council? When was that? In the 60s, when the Pope at the time absolved the Jews of any responsibility for the murder of God, the Christian God. I bet the Jews worldwide went, whew, God damn, about time. Fucking Christians have been burning us and killing us and rendering us into horse fat for the past 2,000 years. Whew, finally, we're home free. Huh. Well, not really. But it took the stigma off the Jews of their being Christ killers. Anyway, being crucified under Roman law was the facts of his execution. Why am I talking about that? Well, it's church night, and this leads to Trump's personal Bible lady, Paula White, okay? So don't be so goddamn impatient. Now, if you want, we could have a discussion over whether the Jewish leaders or the Roman government bore more of the blame for Jesus' wrong conviction. But we're not going to. We could have a theological discussion, it says here, about what it means that, according to Scripture, Jesus came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. But we don't want to get into that either. Because we want to keep this on Paula White, on her level. Wonkette decides to point out, though, that Jesus and his family most definitely were refugees in every sense of the word. They got the fuck out of Bethlehem. You can find that in Matthew 2, because King Herod was going to murder all the firstborn baby boys, much like families fleeing Central America are running because gangs are going to kill everyone. So the Jesus family went to Egypt for a while. You got to wonder if this bitch Paula White, excuse me for the sexist language, I don't know what else to say. This bastard Paula, okay. This bastard Paula White, does she know this? Apparently not. That's the kind of stuff you learn in seminary. Of course, she never went to seminary. And the Reverend Chuck Curry isn't fake newsing you here early or either. Paula White ain't got a degree in shit. Nothing. Moreover, you can bet that she doesn't speak Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek. See, she's a TV pastor whose job is bilking the terminally stupid assholes who watch this stuff and say, I'll send in my, I was going to use this to make my, my payment on my TV, but I'm going to send it to Paula. In other words, she's a con artist, just like El Presidente. In summary and in conclusion, may I have every head bowed, every eye closed, men, women, boys, girls, heads bowed, eyes closed. Paula White should shut the fuck up about the Bible and shut the fuck up about refugees. And when she's done with that, she should shut the fuck up some more. In Jesus' name, amen. You didn't say amen. Thank you. Oh, more. It is church night. And I've been remiss on Church Night Stories for a while. Here's another one. Also from Wonkette. You ought to go to that website, Wonkette, W-O-N-K-E-T-T-E, Wonkette. There is a guy on the, I guess he has a podcast that he puts up on YouTube. He is Dave Daubenmeyer. He goes by Coach. Coach Daubenmeyer. Yeah. But on a recent podcast, Coach says he knows the whole reason that liberals and normal people support abortion. Now, let me be clear. Nobody supports abortion. God damn it. I wish. What is supported is a woman's right to make her own decision. And I've said this a million times before. This is where the lefties totally fucked up when they decided to say, we must continue to have choice. I mean, that is the worst PR job in the history of everything. Calling abortion a matter of choice. It's a matter of privacy. But I'm sorry, the liberals who started calling it choice at this point should have their asses kicked. Look what you've done. You've seen the bumper stickers. It's not a choice. It's a child. Now, see, that wouldn't work if it were about privacy. It's not a privacy. It's it doesn't work. The Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade did not decide abortion was legal or illegal or any fucking thing. Roe v. Wade said that women have a constitutional right to privacy, which obviously includes making a choice to terminate a pregnancy. But no, I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice. That sounds so shitty. It always has to me. Not only was it a stupid marketing ploy, women have got to have choice. Not only was that ignorant as hell, Roe v. Wade was not about choice to begin with. But the people who believe in a woman's right to privacy where it concerns her reproductive rights, they never had a voice in determining how it's going to be marketed. But just think, if it would have been presented the way the Supreme Court ruled, a right to privacy. Now, who can be against a right to privacy? Anyway, back to Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. He knows the whole reason that lefties support Roe v. Wade. You know why? It's because of how much we love drinking fetus blood so that we can get high on something called adrenochrome. That's what this guy says, adrenochrome. Wonkette reports it this way. On his show this week, the one where he sits in front of a weird green screen of a football field and makes up weird shit, he asked his so-called audience why the left was so upset about the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. And the fact that his nomination means that those goddamn left-wingers are going to lose their so-called right to privacy by next year. Daubenmeyer put it this way, Coach, quote, Why are they so upset about abortion? Why are they so interested about death? Why do they want so much? The most important right they're ever going to have is the right for a woman to be able to murder her unborn baby? End quote. Oh, that's so fucking clever. Isn't that clever? Maybe Coach should consider the idea that women don't really want to be forced to give birth against their will. You think? And once again, as I've been saying for 40 years, it's nobody's fucking business except the woman who finds herself pregnant, possibly the other party involved in that pregnancy, her physician, and whatever or whomever she considers to be her spiritual advisor. And a lot of people can leave that last part off if they want to. I would include it, I guess, because I had 35 years of therapy. I don't know. But anyway. So, Coach Daubenmeyer then brought out his buddy Vinny to talk all about our thirst, yours and mine, for fetus blood. Vinny explained, quote, "These people are Satanists. What they do is they sacrifice children and they use the children's blood for their drug, adrenochrome." Who knew? Is that where our adrenochrome comes from, fetus blood? I didn't know that. Like Wong Cat, I've always been under the impression that the way we got our precious adrenochrome was by harvesting the adrenal glands of children who have been molested in the basement of pizza shops. No? So then the coach broke in on Vinny to explain what it is about adrenaline that makes people, adrenaline, or adrenochrome, adrenochrome. What is it makes people feel good? Well, he didn't have an explanation. He just said it makes people feel good. So the evil leftists want more of it. So we make people have abortions, and then we can drink the blood of the sacrificed fetuses. Ooh, man. Now, that doesn't seem like a particularly smart way of going about things. You see, according to the CDC, which is right up the road here, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 66% of legal abortions occur within the first 8 weeks of gestation, and 92% of abortions are performed within the first 13 weeks. That's right. Now, at 8 weeks, the fetus is 0.63 inches long. Can you see that? Yeah. At 13 weeks, the fetus is about 2.9 inches long. About right? Yeah. So I ask you, truth seeker, how much blood are you going to get from that or that? A thimbleful? Certainly not enough to get high on, right? Yeah? No, that much fetal blood isn't going to do it. Surely there must be a better way to obtain the adrenochrome that we all so desperately crave. How do we do it? How about oxidizing epinephrine in a lab? Would that work? So So with what's coming for a woman's right to privacy, which in declaring that a woman has no more of a right to privacy than a dog has a right to ride a fucking bicycle. Or is it a fish? So this time next year, the right to privacy will be gone, and with it, among other things, the right for a woman to terminate a pregnancy. And then there'll be no adrenochrome. Maybe we can all switch to heroin?
I've never heard of adrenochrome.
You never heard of adrenochrome? Well, the coach and Vinny tell you all about it. Let's take a break. When we come back, anybody in the mood for a pizza? How about Papa John's? Huh? How about that sick fucker? You know about Papa John? We'll be right back.
We try to hustle and try to bust and try to cuss them. The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another war, another tower went up where the homeless had their homes. So we prayed with Benedict.
Hey, everybody knows about Papa John's Pizza, right? Seems like he bought up sponsorships for goddamn near every professional sport there is. Got a bunch of former professional sports players to endorse his pizza. You should know that Papa John Schnatter is his last name. John Schnatter is a real racist son of a bitch. Like most white males his age are. So, why do we care? Well, I guess it's because Papa John Schnatter relies on a lot of people of color buying his pizzas. Now, I'm going to use the N-word in the context of this story, so if you don't want to hear me say it, go away, come back in a few minutes. But you know me, I have permission. According to Forbes magazine, Schnatter was on a conference call with some of his executives and a company called the Laundry Service. That's what it's called. It's really a marketing agency. And the goal of this conference call was to strategize ways to avoid the sort of public relation fuck-ups that naturally occur when the public face of your company, John Schnatter, is both aesthetically and politically grotesque. This is a guy who built a 40,000, I don't know if he finished it, a 40,000 square foot home, I think in New Jersey. 40,000 square feet. Oh, well, he's got the money, right? So, naturally, during the brainstorming session, reported by Forbes, picked up by Wonkat, picked up by Microsoft News Network, according to everybody, during that brainstorming session on the phone, Schnatter used the word nigger, as you're inclined to do when you're an asshole whose pizza tastes like you smeared your own ass over it. Now, this is the same guy who, if you remember back last November, he waded into the debate over national anthem protests in the NFL and tried to blame the NFL for slowing sales at his fucking pizza office, restaurants, whatever they're called. Anyway, here we go. On the call this May, Schnatter was asked how he could distance himself from racist groups online. He responded by downplaying the significance of his NFL statement. He said, quote, "Well, Colonel Sanders called blacks niggers." And he complained that Colonel Sanders never faced public backlash for using that word. Oh, my God. I hate people like this. I really do. This worthless piece of shit makes millions, tens of millions of dollars from selling pizzas to whites, blacks, Jews, Gentiles, whoever eats his shit, right? Now, this year, Schnatter stepped down as CEO of Papa John's. He's still the chairman, but he's no longer the chief executive officer because of his moronic statements about NFL players peacefully protesting. He made some fucking asshole remark. Remember, it was the NFL's official pizza. Remember that? Schnatter, reflected on his early life in Indiana. Well, the way that happened, the new CEO, Steve Ritchie, his sole objective this year should have been preventing Schnatter from saying most likely racist stuff out loud. He probably had his phone muted while he took his call at a noisy Starbucks. We've all been there. But it leads to incidents like this. Schnatter reflected on his early life in Indiana, where he said people used to drag African-Americans from trucks until they died. Now, he and his supporters are trying to make the remarks, trying to pretend like the remarks were antipathy towards racism and dragging people to death behind trucks. But a lot of people on that call found the whole thing to be offensive. And after learning about the incident, laundry service owner Casey Wasserman moved to terminate the company's contract with Papa John's. Jesus Christ. Now, that was at Wonkette. This was at Forbes and Microsoft News. Papa John's founder, John Schnatter, admitted to using the N-word during a May conference call and apologized for the comments after Forbes magazine detailed the incident in an article today online. In a statement released by Papa John's, Schnatter said, quote, "News reports attributing the use of inappropriate and hurtful language to me during a media training session regarding race are true. Regardless of the context, I apologize. Simply stated, racism has no place in our society." Oh, you know, doesn't that, I mean, calm down. Take a breath. Every time some white Christian or white Jewish, usually very seldom Jews, but some white Christian, conservative, red-blooded, military-supporting, Trump-loving American man makes really grotesque comments about our darker-skinned brothers and sisters in this country, every time they make a shitty comment or use the N-word, and they're caught, if they don't try to weasel out of it, well, if I offended anybody, you know, that bullshit. If they don't try to weasel out of it, they go ahead and apologize, and then they say, now, racism has no place in our country. Well, you ignorant fucker, why don't you get it out of you? Don't worry about the country. The entire country is racist, John. But the issue is not the country. It's you, motherfucker. You're the one that used the N-word. Racism has no place in our country. Well, that's pretty profound. They always say that, don't they? The new CEO, Steve Ritchie, said in an internal memo obtained by CNBC that was sent today to team members, franchisees, and operators. Quote, "The past 6 months, we've had to take a hard look in the mirror and acknowledge that we've lost a bit of focus on the core values that this brand was built on and that delivered success for so many years. We've got to own up and take the hit for our missteps and refocus on the constant pursuit of better. Constant pursuit of better. That is in the DNA of our brand. Racism has no place in our society." Another company spokesman told CNBC, quote, "Papa John's condemns racism and any insensitive language, no matter the situation or setting. Our company was built on a foundation of mutual respect and acceptance," end quote. To which I say, horse shit. I can't think of a company that was built on mutual respect. What the fuck does that mean? Companies are built on profit motive. Am I going to make money? Am I going to lose money? Built on mutual respect and acceptance? Don't you get tired of hearing that bullshit? I do. I get real tired of it. And then the marketing company, sports agency, Laundry Service, which is owned by Casey Wasserman, cut ties with an unnamed client in May, right after this incident occurred. And Wasserman issued a statement saying they cut the ties due to, quote, "the regrettable recent events that several employees of Laundry Service witnessed during interactions with a client's executive." Shelley Lewis, a spokeswoman for Laundry Service, when contacted by Bloomberg, said, "No comment." Now, according to the marketing experts, aside from the filthy racism and the perpetuation of this shit in American culture, they've settled that. "Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say nigger. I'm sorry." That's the issue. But not according to marketing. Listen up. "The incident underscores the risks of using an individual, in this case, Papa John, to represent a brand," said crisis communications consultant Dan Hill, who is the CEO of Hill Impact. Hill told CNBC, quote, "This is the danger when organizations are too tied to a personality. We saw it with Subway and Jared." Remember Jared, who lost all that weight? It wasn't from eating Subways. It was from chasing after children to molest and rape them. Anyway, this Hill, Dan Hill, said, "When things are going well and those people are popular, well, and they're doing smart things, it works. But then you have a single point of failure, and it's that person's actions that reflect on the entire organization." Yeah, that's the way it works, huh? Now, all this happened after the remarks that Schnatter made in November, critical statements he made about the NFL that ultimately caused the league to remove Papa John's as an official sponsor. See, what he said, he didn't come out in favor of or opposed to taking a knee. What the fuck does he care? What he said, he blamed NFL leadership for hurting his company's performance because the NFL leadership hadn't resolved the controversy over players kneeling during the national anthem. See, it's all about Papa John and his fucking pizzas, right? Schnatter is no longer the CEO of Papa John's, but he's still the chairman, and he is still tied to the brand's image. He's featured prominently on the pizza boxes that this shit comes in. Anyway, Mr. Hill, Dan Hill, the CEO of Hill Impact, the crisis communications consultant, Dan Hill said, quote, "I think the big thing for them going forward, Papa John's, is how do they distance themselves entirely from John?" Well, I'm not a crisis communications consultant, but you know what I think? They should drop the Papa John's. Call it Sister Mary's Pizza or your Aunt Effie's Pizza Pie. But as long as it's called Papa John, right? Am I right? I mean, you know, what do I know? I know that. We stopped buying Papa John's when the fucker got involved. I don't know. There was something else that happened. I forget what it was. Kathy, let's take a break. When we come back, what do I got here? When we come back, something.
Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for an area of sin? All the turmoil's making my blood boil. Because I don't want to see our people dying for oil. See, this so-called media sway don't believe in you the way I'm receiving you.
All right, this should come under the heading of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, but we don't need the music. It comes from the L.A. Times. I just want to share it with you. On the day the government refused to reunite dozens of families separated at the border, one immigrant father showed up to a federal appointment downtown L.A., fearful that he would be deported without his six-year-old son. Hermelindo Checoc came from Guatemala in late May to seek asylum with his son, Jefferson Checoc. That's according to his attorneys. His son was taken from him with little explanation, he said, and sent to a shelter in New York. ICE officials asked Checoc, the father, yesterday morning to appear before an officer as part of his removal process. But when he got there, officials promptly dismissed him because they couldn't find his file. According to the executive director with Immigrant Defenders Law Center, a group of good guys. So anyway, Hermelindo left the court free for now, but still no closer to being united with his son. His case underscores the confusion and heartbreak that has marked the Trump administration's efforts to reunite families this week. Everett's my ass. While some children were placed with parents yesterday, many more families remained separated, not knowing when they would see one another again. The Defenders Law Center is trying to get them reunited before Hermelindo gets deported. Hermelindo said, quote, "I can't sleep. All night, every morning, I pray. I ask God that he will soon return my son. I came with him. I carried him in my arms. I ask God to put him back in my arms as soon as possible. Without him, I can't be happy." End quote. Hermelindo came from Guatemala in late May to seek asylum. A spokesman for the Defenders Law Center said that this case is further evidence of the chaos that's come from these border separations. She said, "Now we're going to do everything we can to reunite this father with his son as soon as possible." Officials with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services would not comment on Checoc or his son, but they issued a statement. Here it comes. Here's a statement. HHS is continuing to work overtime to connect minors with verified parents within the current time constraints required by the court. Due to the safety and security of the unaccompanied alien children in our care, we cannot discuss the identities of any minor children, end quote. These rat fuckers, due to the safety and security, these rat fuckers made the children unsafe and insecure. Newspeak. Anyway, the families who have been ripped apart have spent weeks apart in far-flung detention centers and shelters nationwide. They've had limited phone contact with one another in the outside world. Lawyers also said some separated parents have been pressured into agreeing to deportation in order to reunite with their children. You want your kids back? Get the fuck out of this country. This is America! We're great again! On Monday, Justice Department Attorney Sarah Fabian said reunited families would be released together on immigration parole into the community. They will then be able to pursue their immigration cases or asylum claims as a unit. What do you want to bet that doesn't happen? Outside the federal building on Tuesday, Shay Koch, the dad, choked back tears as he spoke about his son, Jefferson. He couldn't imagine leaving the United States without him. Attorneys representing this man are still piecing together what took place after he and his son were detained at the border. Excuse me. He left his wife and two younger children in San Andres Petén in Guatemala due to danger and crime that permeates everyday life in Guatemala. He was detained by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents near El Paso on May 28th. The following day, his son was taken from him. He said, quote, referring to the asylum, he said, "They told me the law that allows you to enter with children didn't exist anymore. They took me to jail, and I wasn't sure what the motive was," end quote. He also said he signed a series of documents, so he was not sure what those documents said because they were in English. One of the attorneys believes that Shay Koch may have unknowingly signed an expedited removal, triggering his deportation before he could apply for asylum. That's a protection, by the way, guaranteed by international law. He's now scheduled to appear before an ICE officer in October. He wears an ankle bracelet. He learned his son was in New York. First phone call quickly went from joy to unbearable. "Papa, I thought they killed you," the boy said to his father, crying. "You separated from me. You don't love me anymore." "No, my son," Shay Koch told him. "I'm crying for you. I promise soon you will be with me." Just one story, abbreviated, as Donald Trump makes America great again. Huh? I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.